Welcome to Your 20-Minute Podcast with David Brower, where we do our best to give you useful information in 20 minutes or less. Now, here's your host, five-time Voice Arts Awards nominee, David Brower.
Thanks, Alan. This is David Brower with Your 20-Minute Podcast. Our special guest today is Steve Snyder, the author of Shot Down. And Steve's in Sedona, Arizona. He also lives in Seal Beach, California. And he's written a true story of a pilot, Howard Snyder, and the crew of the B-17 Susan Ruth. That's your dad, right?
Yep, that was my dad.
Welcome to the show, Steve. Glad to talk to you, man.
Well, thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
So tell us how this all started. I mean, I'm assuming your dad's the Greatest Generation. I'm assuming you're a baby boomer. Are those fair assumptions?
Those are both correct.
Tell us how this all got started. Where was the epiphany that said, man, I gotta do this?
Okay. Well, I knew the basics of my dad's war history growing up. I knew he was a B-17 pilot. He was stationed with the 8th Air Force in England, and his plane was named the Susan Ruth after my oldest sister, who was 1 year old at the time that he went overseas. And he flew bombing missions over occupied Europe and Germany. And in February 1944, his plane was shot down by two German fighters. He bailed out, and he was missing in action for 7 months.
Wow.
But he evaded capture and eventually made it back to England. But it wasn't until I retired from my career job in 2009 that I really had the time to delve into my dad's war history in more detail. At that time, I had no intention of writing a book.
But the quest is something, right? The quest.
Takes
you places you never imagined.
Absolutely, and it still is. My parents had kept a lot of material from the war years, and I just wanted to go through that and learn more. And there were two items that were really significant.
Yeah.
One was a diary that my dad wrote while he was missing in action about his plane being shot down. It was absolutely riveting.
Oh, my God.
And then my mother had kept all the letters that he'd written to her during the war, and reading those were fascinating. And I just became fascinated with the story of my dad and his crew, and it became my passion. And I started reading book after book about the air war over Europe, went on the internet, spent countless hours doing research, and I joined a number of World War II organizations, going to reunions, listening to veterans tell their stories. And finally, 3 years into it, I just came to the conclusion that the story of my dad was so unique and so compelling that it needed to be told. People needed to learn about it. So I decided to write a book.
Well, good for you. Good for you. A couple of things. One, having that plane named after your sister. Oh, my goodness. I get goosebumps about that. Was that a big deal to her as she got older?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not really sure. My dad was the first pilot, the lead pilot, and as such, he was commander of the plane and the crew.
Sure.
And had the final say in what the plane was named. B-17 had a 10-man crew. Three of the crew were married, but my dad was the only crew member to have a child.
Wow. Huh. So as the Greatest Generation, and we lose them every day, it's such a sad thing, but it makes it more and more important to get these kinds of stories out there, right? To not only share with the Greatest Generation that are still with us, thank goodness, but their survivors and people who are interested in history and friends from long ago and those guys. I mean, it's got to be a wonderful story that your story is just shared in so many places in so many ways. I can only imagine that.
Oh, yeah. It's been over 70 years, and the memory of World War II is fading, and we cannot let that happen. As you mentioned, we're losing these World War II veterans at a rapid pace. There were 16 million World War II veterans at the end of the war, and about 3% is all that remains right now. So it's our duty to remember.
Absolutely right. And every so often, and I want to say it was the 75th anniversary of Normandy, and Pearl Harbor, and when milestones like that hit, all of a sudden interests are peak and people start talking, and generations, younger generations, much younger generations, hopefully get curious and find books like yours and go, damn, really? I had no idea, you know?
I'm on the board of directors of the 306 Bomb Group Historical Association. That was the bomb group my dad was in. And it's our duty to remember, honor, and educate. Remember the air war over Europe, to honor the men who fought it, and to educate the younger generations about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in that vein, I mean, you're like on the speaker's tour. You're like going everywhere all the time to not only promote your book, obviously, but also to talk about the history and everything that's gone on since World War II or during World War II, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, that's why I do what I do. And as you say, I have a really busy schedule. I go to air shows all around the United States, signing copies of my book. I make a lot of appearances, speaking and making PowerPoint presentations. So it's nice. Kind of my passion. It's what I do. It's kind of a second career for me.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And as this show will air, this podcast is going to air on August 2nd. And so on August 6th, just a few days from now, you're going to be doing a PowerPoint presentation at the 306th Flying Training Wing at the United States Air Force Academy of Colorado Springs, about an hour and a half from my house. And so I'm putting that on my calendar. If I can possibly make it, I'd like to come down and meet you and watch your presentation. I think that'd be fascinating.
Oh, thank you. Where do you live?
I live in Loveland, Colorado.
Oh, well, I'll be in Loveland at the Loveland Airport in July, signing copies of my book when the Collins Foundation Wings of Freedom Tour visits
there.
Oh,
yeah, absolutely right. Oh, my gosh, how funny.
Our middle son and his family live in Fort Collins.
Okay.
So we get up there, and we have our two little grandsons. So that's a twofer for me. I get to see the grandsons and then sign copies of the book that the Wings of Freedom Tour sells on there.
Well, I'll make a plan on going there for sure. So a must-read World War II enthusiasts. The reviews are incredible. Riveting story. Couldn't put it down. This should be made into a movie. Do you see that happening?
Well, I talk to people, or people talk to me occasionally about it, but so far nothing's come to fruition.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of filming myself, with filmmakers, documentary filmmakers.
Okay.
I hope to make a documentary someday. We're working on that, but
oh,
we'll
that
have
would
to
be great.
See if that actually happens or not.
And your book, it's a number one bestseller on Amazon. It's a Kindle, a hardcover, paperback, audiobook, which I was thrilled to see. I do audiobooks from time to time, and Richard Ryman did a great job on your book. That's just, I love that stuff. So how did you know you were going to do an audiobook from the get-go, or how did that come about?
No, I had, didn't really know anything about audiobooks or how to do that, I'm trying to remember now, it was, I don't know, about a year and a half, two years after the book was first published, Richard contacted me about the possibility of doing audio book, and it seemed like a good idea. He handled everything for me to set it up on Audible and iTunes. And,
nice.
So it's been very good. I started listening to audiobooks myself when I drive between California and Arizona.
I know, right?
And it's fun. The only drawback to my book, though, is that there's no pictures in my audiobook.
Well, there
and
you go.
And in the print book, there's over 200 time period photographs.
Folks have to get all the different variations. But anyway, Richard did a wonderful job on that book. I was really impressed. So let's talk about you. Like I'm looking at your speaking engagement schedule, man. You're like going like at least once a week, sometimes two, three times a week. I mean, do you just like live in your RV, or what do you do?
No, I just I don't have an RV, so I just fly commercially to all these places that I go to.
I'd ride my Harley if it was me, but I wouldn't have enough time to get there.
yeah, that's problematic doing that.
Exactly right. Your book has received such rave reviews. I mean, you're, what, 25 different national book awards, member of numerous World War II. You are a member of numerous World War II organizations, and of course the 306 bomb group that you talked about. Those national book awards, how do those, I can't imagine getting one, two, or three, let alone 25. How did those come about? Not individually, but I mean, that's quite high recognition. That's amazing.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, there's quite a few different contests that go on, and so I just would find out about them. Either I Google book awards, contests, and then submit my book, or find out about them. And so the vast majority of the contests, the book's been entered in. It's won an award, so I'm very honored about that.
Absolutely. And it does nothing more than just promote your book, which is the whole purpose anyway, is to get it out there to as many people and as many ways as you possibly can. So one of the interesting things I read about your book was one of the interviews was with one of the German fighters that knocked your dad's plane out of the sky. Is that right?
Yeah, there were two Focke-Wulf German fighters, 190s, that attacked my dad's plane. It was sort of after a bombing mission to Frankfurt, Germany, where my dad's, they dropped their bombs successfully, but the bomb bay doors got hit by flak, and they couldn't get them back up, and that caused the drag in the plane. They lost their airspeed, and they started lagging behind the formation, and they were singled out by these two fighters who shot down my dad's plane, but both those German fighters were shot down as well. One was piloted by Siegfried Merrick, and he crashed and died, but the other was piloted by Hans Berger. The gunners on my dad's plane actually shot Hans Berger down. They shot each other down.
Oh, my gosh.
And he bailed out and made it through the war, and one day my wife, Glenda, just casually said, well, why don't you try to find the German pilot that shot your dad's plane down? Which at the time I thought it was a ridiculous idea. There's no way in the world I could do that. But like a good husband, I did what she told me to do.
Yeah, boy, that's what we do.
And I found Hans Berger.
How did that happen? Oh, my gosh. I can't imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, at first blush, I love you, dear. Great idea. I hope it works. But that's a freaking needle in a haystack.
Absolutely. I thought it'd be impossible because most likely I thought he died during the war.
Sure.
Or it's 70 years later, you know, he's passed on by now. I can't speak German, but I just Googled trying to find a Luftwaffe pilot, and a couple forums came up, which I joined, and I posted inquiries because I knew the day, the time of day, and the location where the plane was shot down. And a week, two guys got back to me, one from England and one from Belgium. And on that day, there were 12 B-17 shot down, and the one shot down south of Chimay, Belgium, just north of the French border, was shot down by Hans Berger, and fortunately for me, became a translator after the war, so he speaks perfect English.
Oh my gosh, fascinating! That's like goosebumps on steroids right there. I can't imagine the emotions that you went through doing that interview. I can't even imagine.
You mentioned goosebumps. As I'm talking about this, I'm getting goosebumps again because it was so exciting finding him.
Oh man. Absolutely.
I was just beside myself. And you see, Hans is still alive. He's 95 years old now, lives in Munich, Germany, and I'm going over to Europe this fall, and hopefully he's in good enough health for me to come and visit him again, because it could be the last time that I ever see him. I'd like to visit him at least one more time.
You bet. So when you did interview him, it was in person?
Well, for the book, I interviewed him over the phone and through email.
Okay.
But in 2016, I went to Munich, and we had lunch at a little restaurant across the street. We had some Wiener Schnitzel and an Augustiner beer, and went back to his house, and I filmed an interview with him. And we got to know each other. While I was there, he brought out his logbook and showed me his entry on February 8th of 1944, where he shot down a B-17, and he had to bail out because he was shot down.
Oh, my gosh. So is a picture of that flight book in your book?
No, because that was after I wrote the book. There's a couple pictures of Hans in the book of him during the war.
Okay.
They're in the book. And he gave me some wonderful insight that's in the book about what it was like to go up against the 8th Air Force.
Oh, I bet. So let's talk about when your dad got shot down, he was MIA for what, 7 months?
7 months, which was really had a part of my mom, because my other sister, Nancy, was born while my dad was missing in action. So my mom's back home with a one-year-old girl, infant daughter, and didn't know if she'd ever see her husband again.
Yeah. So
7 months.
And he, I mean, that's got to seem like an eternity. I don't care who you are. But he did you said he wrote a diary. Tell us a little bit about that. What happened during that 7 months that you know of?
Well, after my dad bailed out, he came down in some trees and his parachute got hung up and he was dangling 20 feet off the ground and couldn't get down. But fortunately for him, a couple of young Belgian men, Henri Franken and Raymond Durvin, came to his aid before the Germans got to him. They helped him down out of the tree, and they told him it was during the day. They told him to stay hidden till it was nighttime because it was too dangerous to move him during the day with German patrols in the area. So they came back and got him, took him to a farmhouse where he stayed one night. And they, a Belgium customs officer, Paul Tilken, came and got him on a tandem bike to take him to another location. And he was moved around from place to place to place.
Wow.
He might stay one night at a house. He might spend 6 weeks. It all depended on how brave the people were who lived there and how dangerous the Belgium underground thought it was for him to stay there.
Well, I was going to say that had to be an amazing network that was already set up when your dad got shot down, right?
Oh, yeah. In these occupied countries, the underground and the resistance were amazing people.
Yeah.
They saved my dad's life, and they risked their lives, or really not only their lives, but their friends and family's lives, because if the German secret police, the Gestapo, found out, they'd be arrested, tortured, neither shot or sent to a concentration camp. And some of the people that helped my dad and his crew met that fate.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I can't imagine. So as the 7 months are winding down, what happened? When did you and your family become aware that my dad's alive, you know, and your mom's going crazy because she knows he's alive? How did that all transpire?
Well, she didn't know if he was alive or dead. There was no communication. All she got was a telegram from the War Department saying that he was missing in action.
Okay.
But several months of him being moved around by Belgian people, he finally got tired of hiding. So he decided to join the French resistance and get back into the fight. If you can believe that,
that's
amazing.
That is amazing. I had an uncle like that. That's wow.
He could have stayed hunkered down and stayed hidden
until
the U.S. armies came up through France after D-Day. But word came that the Allies had landed at Normandy on June 6th of 44. And before he went into the Air Force, he was in the infantry. He was in the Army for a year. So he knew how to fight on the ground, unlike other airmen.
Right.
And so some of his Belgium helpers, actually a woman, Amy Cools, they rode on bicycles over the Belgian border into France, and he joined a French resistance unit. They were called the Mackey. The Mackey were small ragtag independent guerrilla groups located all across France. There were about 20, and the group he joined up, and it was led by a French lieutenant who had escaped from a German prisoner of war camp. And they harassed the Germans. They'd attack convoys, sabotage railway lines, disrupt communications, assassinate German officers, and there's a number of instances in the book of encounters of my dad had with the Germans. And finally, 7 months after being shot down, word came that they were Allied U.S. troops in a nearby village of Trelon, France. So he walked into the village, into the town square, up to an army major, actually was elements of Patton's Third Army, which had come up through France after D-Day, and identified himself. They interrogated to make sure that he was who he said he was. And then he got a ride on a convoy taking German prisoners to Paris. And then once he got to Paris, he got on a transport and then made it back or went back to England.
What a celebration. I can only imagine. We're about out of time here, Steve. I want to thank you so much. I invite people to go to the website, Steve Snyder, author. That's S-N-Y-D-E-R, Steve Snyder, author.com. He's on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitter, and, of course, the best-selling book on Amazon, in Kindle, audiobook, hardcover, and paperback, Shot Down, the True Story of Pilot Howard Snyder and the Crew of the B-17, Susan Ruth. Steve, it's been a thrill, man. Pleasure, and I hope to see you in Loveland here in July.
Yeah, it's like the middle, it's like the 13th and 14th or something like that. So, I hope to see you there, and thanks for having me on the show.
You're very welcome.
Listen to your 20-minute podcast with David Brower on the go. Downloads are available on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, any podcast app, and on our website at davidbrowervo.com/your20-minute podcast. Until next time, thank you for listening.